You know, the grit for me over the holiday season is stomaching some of the people I'm going to have the meal with. That's probably too honest.
You know what? You just said what everybody else is thinking. Although I don't have personally any people like that in my life because they might be listening.
Yeah, okay. So just throw me under the bus. Thank you. Hey, this is Sherry Gregory, and you're listening to Grit and Grace, Good Girls Breaking Bad Rules. Did you know that you can join the conversation on our website at gritandgrace.info? That's grit, the letter N, grace, all one word, .info. We would love to hear from you in a comment or in a voice message. Well, today, my delightful co-host Amy Carroll and I are discussing all things delicious, holiday food and cooking. So it turns out that we have something in common. Neither of us really love being in the kitchen. And we're kind of stuck with this bad rule. You have to cook every holiday thing we eat.
Yes. Well, I was surprised to hear that you don't like to cook because, I mean, I see your baklava on Facebook on a regular basis and just long to be in your kitchen. I was surprised by that. Why don't you like to cook?
Well, that's because of my son. My son is 23 going on 24, and he's just recently, over the last few years, gotten into a cooking kick. But I don't like to cook because when I was growing up, my mother had such a very, again, perfectionistic way of doing everything in the kitchen. For her, she would say it would be very systematic. You know, we had to level everything off with a knife and everything was exact and precise. And she didn't allow anybody else in her kitchen. It was just her and me, which actually, in retrospect, was kind of a sweet time for us together. But I was so hyper-focused on doing everything perfect and doing everything right. And I didn't ever learn that kitchen could be a place of community. And so I did exactly what she had done, which was kick people out. I mean, we would have guests over and they would ask if they could come help and she'd be shooing them out. No, no, no. She didn't want them in the kitchen with her because they might not do things right. And my personality should have welcomed people into the kitchen. And so what I've finally realized is the reason I don't like to cook is it's so isolating. But it's isolating because I've isolated myself. So the reason I've started enjoying cooking more in the last few years is because my son just shows up and says, hey, mom, do you want to learn to make scones? Or, hey, mom, let's learn to make baklava. And I love being in the kitchen as long as there's other people there with me.
Ah, that's really insightful.
Yeah.
Well, we have what my husband refers to as a one-butt kitchen. So when there are two butts in there, it becomes a little crowded. So we try. The idea of community in the kitchen is really, really appeals to me. I'm going to have to try to make room for another tushy.
I love it.
Well, mine is that I think I don't mind the cooking itself. It's all the preparation that goes in ahead of time. So it's the finding the recipe, making the list. I especially hate going to the grocery store. Barry and I really need to figure this out because he loves to go to the grocery store. So after 26 years, you would think that we would have worked out some kind of G and haw there, but we haven't yet. But anyway, we're working on that because I do see the value of family meals. And especially now that my boys are at college and they just come home for short visits, I don't want to rush out. I see the value of slowing down, sitting down at the table. And the table really is a place to build community.
So true. One of my friends, Denise Hughes, pointed out that for those of us who are highly sensitive people, cooking is really overstimulating. I'd never thought of that. But the kitchen, when you're in the midst of doing a big meal, you have all the tasting, you have all the smells, you have all the sounds going on. I mean, there's just a lot of sensory stimulation. And I realized that I tend to try to cram it all into one day, or I used to. What I'm doing a lot better at now that I'm aware that I need to be more strategic about it is I'm starting to spread it out over several days so that the grocery shopping happens several days ahead and I do the pre-chopping or, you know, what if some of the pre-prep is and I put all that stuff in the fridge. And then so maybe I can actually spread it out over 3 or 4 days so that on the day that the meal is actually going to be served, I'm not trying to do everything all at once.
Yes.
I'm not trying to do the shopping and, oh, by the way, the house cleaning and figure out what I'm going to serve everything on or in. And what I've found is as the meal is being prepared, I have to take intentional breaks to just get out of the kitchen, sit down, put my feet up, maybe listen to a song. And there's a part of me that's like, oh, you're being lazy. It's like, no, I'm saving the sanity of everybody in this house by making sure that I'm not working myself up into this frenzy of, the meal, it has to be done perfectly on time. But I'm pacing and pausing, pacing and pausing are so important for highly sensitive people. And I think they're important for all of us.
That's fantastic. One of the things that I love in my kitchen is my crock pot for two reasons. It allows you to pace and pause. Mm-hmm. It also allows me to go to work when I'm at my best, which is morning. By 5 o'clock, I'm done. That's just my wiring. 5 o'clock in the morning, I am up and ready to go and singing zippity doo dah. But at 5 o'clock in the evening, I don't want to do anything. The crock pot works really well for me. We've included some recipes this week and some links to recipes. Mm. And one of the recipes that I've included is a soup that is so amazing. I love it because it can be frozen. So that's another way to prepare ahead, have some pauses, pull it out of the freezer, be able to fix it later, Christmas Eve or sometime when you're not expecting a big meal, but it's hearty and good.
Wonderful. I look forward to that one. And I'm going to put up a recipe for my mother's rice pilaf. Mm-hmm. That's a recipe that, if the family lore is accurate, it comes from Turkish Armenia. So it's really authentic and it's easy to make and it's absolutely delicious and involves butter. So how can you go wrong with that?
Yes.
All right. One of the corollaries to the bad rule you have to cook everything that we eat is that hot foods must be served hot, cold foods served cold, and the meal must start on time. And the thing I'm slowly realizing is that the temperature of the food doesn't matter as much as the tone of the home.
I have to really fight against that rule because I feel so inept in the kitchen, what that translates to is we don't ever have anyone over. Mm. I have a friend that is an incredible cook. She's known for her cooking. They had invited us over 3 or 4 times. It was clearly my turn. And I love this friend and her husband. They're one of these, you know how hard it is to have a couple yes. that you really connect with. And they are one of our couple friends. It was my turn. I had been hemming and hawing, didn't know what to fix, was afraid I couldn't do it as well as she did. Finally, one day, I was praying. I felt like God really pricked my heart about just my attitude about hospitality in general. So I texted her when I was finished with my quiet time and said, "Want to come over for pizza tonight?"
Good for you.
It didn't allow me time to obsess about how clean or not clean my house was. I thought, I'm just going to break the barrier here of having them into our home. It was fun. They didn't care. I didn't cook. It was the perfect evening.
They weren't horribly offended and didn't stomp out of the house saying, "We're never coming back again."
Exactly. That's what's in my head.
Exactly. Well, and you know, one of the things I'm slowly realizing is I put so much time into trying to, I was going to say please others, but really the word is impress others. A number of years ago, more than a decade ago, we were staying with some family for a week. And I genuinely wanted to help with the burden of all the food. But rather than think what they might like, I decided to make the best food from my family, which would be Middle Eastern food. And so we went to the grocery store. We spent over $100 on groceries. I spent the whole day making a full Middle Eastern meal. Well, this was for a family who's used to meat and potatoes. And so, you know, we put everything out on the table. Now, my husband, by this point, we'd been married 20 years. He was used to tabbouleh and pilaf and cheese barak and falafel. So for him, all of this was normal. But for this particular family, honest to goodness, the man of the family sat down, took one look and went, "What is this?"
Oh,
very
dear.
Honest family. We passed the food around and he let everything go by and he got up and he made himself 5 peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. And I was so crushed. And in looking back at it, I realized he was a smart man. And I should have been grateful because I'd made him my favorite food and now there were leftovers. There was more for me. But I took his rejection of my food as a rejection of me, when he'd done the responsible adult thing. He had made food that would keep him from being hungry that evening. And so, again, it's so easy to get all of these expectations and emotions wrapped up into something as basic as food that is supposed to keep us sustained. It's not about the food. It's not about the perfect recipe. It's not about the perfect presentation. It's about, are we coming together as a community around our table, whether it's with our family or with our friends?
That's it. The food sustains us. The table creates the community. Ooh. So if we could simplify it down to those two basic elements, it really gets rid of the bad rule.
I love it. I love it. You had a good fact for us to focus on to replace the bad rule. What was that?
Food is just the vehicle for friendship.
For me, that is so mind-blowing because food has so much added baggage for me beyond that. You know that my background includes an eating disorder and, of course, you know, just all of that perfectionism in the kitchen. And the idea that food is just a vehicle for friendship. And to shift the focus away from whatever the angst might be, whether we feel adequate in the kitchen or whether we have battles with food personally, the focus is on the friendship. And when we do that, if we do bring some unhealthy baggage to the holiday table, it starts to free us because we're not focusing on the food. We're not focusing on our own skills and abilities. We're focusing on the other people, which goes a long way to break any bad rule that we might have.
Absolutely. Well, Jesus, he's our example in all things. He's also our example here. We've been reading Matthew 11 from the Message for the last few weeks. There were two key phrases in that passage. He says, get away with me is one of them. The other one is keep company with me. And I'm always struck when we read the New Testament, when we read the Gospels and read the words in red, Jesus is constantly challenging us to deeper relationship. So if we make our meals over the holidays about relationship more than about the perfection of the food, I think we'll be on track.
I love that. The word company, of course, I think, well, company's coming. You know, we have to spiff up the house because company's coming. We have to fix this huge meal because company's coming. But if Jesus is saying, keep company with me, listening to you, my first thought was, oh, he's in the kitchen with me. We're fixing these meals together. And I don't have to feel alone or isolated. What a difference it could be to think, but I'm not alone. I'm not isolated here. At all times, I'm keeping company with Christ. And that can make a huge shift in perspective and to realize that whoever it is that he brings around the table, whether it's family, whether it's friends, and whatever we're serving, whether, you know, I'm slaving over the hot stove or slaving over that hot phone call to the pizza delivery, either way, it's about community, not some competition as to whether we can fix the best food or set the best table. I mean, certainly, you know, not to swing the other way. Excellence. Sure. Those of us who are recovering perfectionists are aiming for excellence. But in terms of the permission that we're trying to offer to our listeners, this might be the year to pull out the beautiful china and the crystal goblets. This might be the year to pull out the paper plates.
Yes.
That's not what makes the big difference either way.
Well, even in choosing the food and choosing the recipes as you challenged me to do, which I really, seriously, when you asked me to get recipes, I broke into a cold sweat. But I realize I do have recipes. I do cook. And one of my favorites that I've done the last couple of years is something that I put more effort into is I really do love to bake. Ooh. I just don't do it much because I don't need to eat the baked goods.
Yeah, but, I understand.
But at Christmas time, I do some baking. One of my favorite things to make is spritz cookies. I don't know if you've ever made them.
I love them.
My grandmother always made spritz cookies. So the smell of spritz cookies and the taste of spritz cookies, that's Christmas time to me. But that goes back to the relationship with my grandmother that I had as a little girl. So now I've brought that to my boys too. And look, spritz cookies are great. You have to have a cookie press to make them. So it's a little fancy in that way. But a cookie press is like a Play-Doh fun factory. So it's just like that. So then you get something yummy in the end of it. So inviting your kids into the kitchen to make cookies is a terrific thing to do. It's relational. It's yummy. So you hit both of those. So I think you can choose foods that build relationships too.
Oh, I like that idea. I hadn't thought of that. choosing foods that help build relationships. All right, so what do you see as being the grit and the grace piece in this whole conversation?
Well, for me, the grit would be to actually do some cooking instead of just copping out and going out to eat or that kind of thing. There is time for that, right? Mm-hmm. There is some self-discipline involved in knowing, okay, so I need to do some cooking and actually doing it. That's the grit for me.
You know, the grit for me over the holiday season is stomaching some of the people I'm going to have the meal with. Well, and just realizing that smiling and nodding for an hour or two isn't going to kill me. And listening is a beautiful art. And I guess that leads straight into grace, realizing that we're all flawed and we're all quirky. And just like I'm having to smile and nod at somebody across the table, there's people at that table who are probably having to smile and nod at me. And so we all need to be serving up large portions of grace at our holiday tables to each other.
Yes, beautiful.
We hope that as you begin your meal planning for the upcoming holidays, that you'll remember that the focus isn't the food. The focus is what the food allows. Gathering around the table over a meal allows friendships to flourish and memories to be made. If you head on over to the webpage for today's episode at gritandgrace.info, you'll find a number of free downloads, including some of our favorite family recipes that we're excited to share with you. And you'll also find this week's permission slip to remind you that you don't have to obey the bad rule that says you have to cook every holiday thing we eat. Instead, you can focus on the truth that food is a vehicle for friendship. We hope you've enjoyed episode number 22 of Grit and Grace, Good Girls Breaking Bad Rules. Join us for next week's holiday break when we'll discuss clothes, appearance, and body image during the holiday season. For today, grow your grit. Embrace God's grace. And when you run across a bad rule, by all means, break it.